This edition of the Optimize We podcast is brought to you by the Biohacking Index. Visit biohackingindex.com for ratings and reviews of your favorite wellness solutions and wellness providers. Hello and welcome to the Optimize We podcast. I am your host, Lindsay O'Neill, and today I am joined by one of my favorite people that I met at the Dragonfly Conference about a year and a half ago, Angela Foster. She's an award-winning nutritionist. She's a health and performance coach, keynote speaker, which is how I actually came across her. She was giving a keynote speech on the Gaia stage in Colorado. She is the host of a globally top 1% ranked podcast called the High Performance Health Podcast. She was formerly a very successful corporate lawyer, but she transformed her career following a personal health crisis and story, which we are going to dive into on this podcast today. So I'm very excited to welcome my friend and a leading voice in the biohacking and health optimization world, Miss Angela Foster. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Lindsay. It's so great to be here with you today. So nice to see you again.
Yeah, it's been way too long, and it's because we live across the pond from each other, but hopefully we'll make it across the pond to visit sometime soon. We have a lot going on with our kids and with business. So I wanted to just introduce you to this podcast because this podcast is all about optimization of health. And that's really what you've dedicated your life to in your business. So tell us a little bit about your story. How'd you get started in everything that you're doing now?
Yeah. So as you were saying, right, I was a corporate lawyer for many years, which definitely was not about health optimization. It was all about getting the deals through. And, you know, we just respected sleep. We just stayed up all night in meeting rooms and negotiating weekends of work. You know, there wasn't a lot of recovery. And I think, I don't know about you, Lindsay, but like in my 20s, I felt pretty invincible. It was almost like I could do anything and there weren't many consequences. But then late 20s, I was looking at starting a family, and I discovered I had PCOS and endometriosis. That was like my first foray into health and understanding with PCOS the link to metabolic health, because really it's a metabolic health disorder at its core. I started learning about how to manage my blood glucose. I did need surgery for both of those things. But then, you know, after that, I was really looking at lifestyle practices. And then I fortunately fell pregnant very quickly after surgery with my first child and made partner when I was 8 months pregnant. So it was all a bit crazy. Oops. You know, when you go for a couple of goals and you're like, well, I could go for both or one, what should I do? And I was like, well, I just go for both and see which one comes in. And they both came in. And then, which was probably more crazy, is that by the time I was due to go back in the UK, it's quite nice. I think it's different in America. We get a year's maternity leave. So I had a nice chunk of time off. Yeah, it's quite long. But I was 3 months pregnant with my second child when I was due to go back. So that wasn't really, like, I don't think that made many people very happy.
I think we're moving. We're moving to the UK.
Yeah. Come over here. Yeah, you can have as many babies as you want for years off at a time. It's quite funny. So I struggled with postnatal depression. That's really what got me into this, because I wasn't expecting it. I think looking back, ultimately, I ended up with postnatal depression 3 times, or postpartum, I think you guys call it. And then I was diagnosed with major depressive disorder by the time my youngest was 2, and I was having these bipolar episodes. And looking back, although I felt surprised then, I was up and down as a teenager. I think kind of my mental health has been a struggle for like bigger or lesser degrees throughout my life. But it really hit me hard when my hormones were dropping post-pregnancy, and then it sort of continued. And I think it got progressively worse until my daughter was 2 years old, and I'd sort of really created a prison of my own making in my own mind at this point. And I'd given up my legal career. I was at home with the kids. I had lost my identity, I guess, to a degree. And I was in this situation, which I think is common to so many mums, right? I was in this crazy place where I thought, you know, they'd be better off without me. And so, but then I was thinking, how can I end my life and leave my kids without a mother and my husband without a wife? And I was just in this really destructive thought pattern in place. And it took its toll on my physical health. Ultimately, I ended up hospitalized with double pneumonia. both viral and bacterial. I was neutropenic. My white blood cell count was so low. And so I was pretty broken and burnt out by this point. And that was the change in step for me, because when I was in hospital, I remember them telling me, you know, we've got you on antibiotics. They didn't tell me they thought they would have to intubate me and that they were thinking of moving me to intensive care within a couple of days. They just said to me, look, your white blood cell count's really low. You're neutropenic. We really do need you to rest. Understood what that meant enough to know I need to really take a look at my life. And when my kids had been to see me, I remember looking at them and looking at photos afterwards and just felt this deep, overwhelming sense of love and connection for them and thinking, I've got to get well. You know, there's a real chance here that I don't get out. And it was that connection that made me decide I've got to get really well. And it's so interesting because, you know, we can look at like Dr. Joe Dispenza's work, we can look at Dr. Bruce Lipton and how they talk about how our mind can change our physiology. And it changed mine really quickly. The moment I made that decision, within 48 hours, my blood work started to change and my white blood cell count started to rise and I started to heal, which is really nothing short of incredible. And that was the beginning of the journey back to wellness for me. And then ultimately, I've gone on to help other people.
It's something that we talk a lot about on this podcast and just general conversations with people in the industry is the power of the mind. And you can talk about it in two different ways. So obviously, your story is extremely powerful. And my story is the same. You know, I had a big tech career and got hit by a car when I was pregnant and then ended up taking care of myself. I got really sick. And then my daughter, you know, suffered from chronic condition for a long time. And it was when she finally made an emotional decision at 8 years old to not be the sick kid anymore, to be the healer instead, the happy, healthy kid and also the healer, that all of her chronic conditions went away. It was kind of like a magic overnight thing. And all of her doctors that we had been seeing for 6-7 years were baffled. We're absolutely baffled by the transformation that she had had. But a lot of times where we see this mind meld is in these new biohacking technologies and tools. Like you have something sitting behind you that I'm wearing on my neck, you know, the Leela Quantum. You have the cube, I have the capsule.
I have the capsule actually in my pocket. So I'll usually wear it depending on what outfit. If not, it's always in my pocket.
You're doubling down.
I double down.
And so I'd love to get your perspective on, you know, the mind is a very powerful thing. And it's what helped you kind of kickstart your own transformation and now the purpose of your life. And it did the same for me. But how does the mind potentially trick us and keep us buying all of these cool things? And how can we get duped by our mind too? Like where marketing strategies, because that's the area of business I used to work in. What did we try to do? We tried to get you to buy something, right? So we would tell you that it would fix your problems. I worked in pharmaceutical advertising for many years and, you know, there's a pill for every ill. And even though it might turn your dog purple or have you grow a third nipple with all of the side effects of it, you know, we're still trying to like scare people into, oh, you got to buy this product. You got to buy this thing. Are we tricking people's minds into thinking that this biohacking stuff works? Or how do we really know that it's legit?
That is such a great question. You know, I think that the reason people end up spending so much money on stuff is partly because we've lost our sense of self-agency. And if you look at part of the whole biohacking thing is to take hundreds sometimes of supplements, which is really just a replacement for allopathic medicine solution, which is drugs, right? It's something outside of you that is designed to cause wellness, or that's what you're hoping for, that in some way it's going to heal you. But as you say, there's side effects, and there's side effects if you take lots of supplements as well. It's very interesting because I recently interviewed the CEO, the daughter of the founder of Glycan Age, which is a company that looks at biological aging from an inflammatory perspective. Oh. And what they see is that in many cases, the most rapid aging is the biohackers who are doing all these things in the belief that they're lowering their biological age, but it's just too much on the system.
Right.
And, you know, I got their lowest age 20 through literally doing the fundamentals of stress management, sleep, nutrition, movement. And those are the pillars, right? And social connection that we know we all need. But I guess it's kind of sexy and fun to have things that we can play with and believe that they're going to work. But also, I think it is that sense of self-agency that we've lost and that we're looking outside of ourselves. And what I found through my healing journey and working with so many women is that the solution is always inside of us. It's there already. And I think we just need to acknowledge that. And that gives us our power. It's really interesting, you know, because obviously I like, you know, Joe Dispenza and Bruce Lipton's work, but I also like the work of Napoleon Hill. And he wrote the book he's most famous for, Think and Grow Rich. Yep. And he also wrote Success Principles. And I think that was on the back of, you know, he had like something like 65 million people or something following him by that time on his radio broadcasts. And then they were put into this book. And it's really interesting when you read it, because there's one statement that comes out, which is that whatever the mind can conceive and believe, it can achieve. And I think it's that and belief bit and believe that most people are missing. And because of that, they have the bit they want to, the mind has conceived it, and they want to achieve it, and they don't know how to connect the dots. And so that's why they end up buying all this stuff.
And a lot of the other guys that you mentioned, the Joe Dispenzas, they're all about creating space, right? The meditation to allow the space, because there's a lot of noise that happens in our minds all the time, especially when we're not getting enough sleep, especially when we're not grounding, especially when we're gunking up our lymphatic system and our endocrine system with yucky food and highly toxic, you know, water and air quality and that kind of thing. When we are overwhelmed with too much stuff in our mind, or we just can't think clearly, a lot of these guys will tell you, you know, you need to create space. You need to create space in your mind for that belief to even happen. A lot of us just, like you were doing in your legal career and I was doing in my tech career, I was running myself ragged on empty, working nonstop. And for a lot of female entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs in general, we do the same thing. You know, I'm kind of doing the same thing right now. I'm working all the time because I'm working out of my home. I do have a small office still, but I very rarely ever go there because I can get more done working from here. You know, I wake up, I do my whole morning routine. So, and I know that you work with a lot of high performance women as well. What have you seen in terms of the mental health, the mental clarity, and the receiving of all of this, you know, wonderful stuff and their stress levels as it pertains to optimization of their health? Like what happens to them?
What I've seen, yeah, such a great question. So what I've seen is that we actually work a lot with biofeedback and heart rate variability. So when we're working with clients, we'll take assessments of like 3 days, 5 days, where we give them a continuous HRV and heart rate monitor so we can see what's going on. And what we've observed is that if they're kind of redlining it all day, they're redlining it at night. And so they're not getting that recovery. And often there is some who are really good at being able to switch off from the day, and they're very efficient with their sleep, and they might not be sleeping that long, but they're getting deep recovery. And I think those are the people that we see that, you know, we look at them and we go, I don't know how she does that. Like, because she's just really got that recovery dialed in and she's able to switch off. That isn't the vast majority of people. Most people are having some level of disruption, at least by the time they reach perimenopause, when if you're not already on a wild ride, your hormones are going to take you on a roller coaster. And then we start to see some changes. And I think that's when women wake up and they're like, what is going on? I don't feel like me anymore. And I can't keep going like this. And there's also a reassessment at that point of their values. They're like, well, am I even doing what I think I want to be doing? Is this what my life amounts to? And so then there's a lot of introspection if people are open to it. There's also a whole section, I think, of people who are, I guess, blissfully ignoring it. An evening glass of wine is a really great way to do that. Do you know what I mean? Because it just kind of dulls the senses, it releases GABA, it makes you feel relaxed, and you don't have to address it.
That's a our version of the midlife crisis. You know, we're not going out and getting a 25-year-old girlfriend and driving a sports car like, you know, the guys do in their midlife crisis. But we're, you know, we're maybe just either ignoring it or reassessing. Like you said, it's a pivotal time in your whatever point in time when your life starts to shift. And I feel like a lot of women are going through a shift right now because of all of the grand awakening, of, especially in the United States. I know that you guys have much stricter rules around your food in the UK and the EU, but our food systems here are awful. Mm. You know, we're making highly toxic stuff and feeding it to our children and then sending the less toxic stuff over to your kids across the pond. Yeah.
It is crazy. Do you know, one of the very first courses I did was a health coaching course with the Institute for Integrative Nutrition in the US, IIN. And when I did that course, I was scared. Like, as I was studying it, I was like, oh my God, really? And I was just checking everything, going, is this really true? Is this really true? Like, is this what our food is like? And that's when I realized, as I dived into it, actually, no, this is very different. This was an American program, and in Europe, things are very different. And it amazes me just how many toxins there are. And even things like tomato ketchup, how different it looks in America, the ingredient list, compared to the UK. And it seems unfair. It feels like it's harder to be healthy in America.
There's so many ingredients and things that shouldn't have more than just a few ingredients, like French fries from McDonald's have something like a few dozen ingredients in them. It should just be potatoes and salt. And then whatever it's fried in, it used to be fried in beef tallow in the United States, and now it's fried in all sorts of seed oils, but it has tons of chemicals that I can't even pronounce that are in French fries at McDonald's. They're not even real food anymore. But back to this whole point, it's like, you know, going through perimenopause now and not having great sleep, running a business, running a couple of businesses, running a family and a household, and you know, now starting to wake up to, oh my gosh, I've been feeding my kids crap. I've been feeding myself crap. I need to do all of these things. It can get really overwhelming. Mm. So what do you tell your clients, your patients, you know, when they get to that point of overwhelm where they just kind of start to shut down?
So for me, I think the principle that I've always gone with is we don't want to feel bad about what we're doing, because I think actually it leads to more destructive behavior. I think that approaching it from what can I bring in? Because ultimately the new habits are going to crowd out the old. So it's like, where can I make a positive change? And I think with food, there really isn't anything neutral that I can think of. I don't think food is chemical information for your body. So I don't think that you can say, oh, this food is just neutral. It's going to have zero impact. It's either going to have a positive or a negative, or in some cases, I guess both, right? Depending on whether you've taken something that's highly nutritious and then soaked it in some oils that aren't good. So I think when people start to approach it in a way of, how can I nourish my body? How can I do it like I'm really taking care of me and taking care of my family? What would that look like if I want to have high energy and vitality? And if you can begin to take tiny steps, and then that institutes more, because we start to gain a little bit of a momentum. As soon as we can get that positive feedback loop going, it's so much easier, you know? And normally what happens is, when I'm working with clients, is quite often they'll say, I can't believe it. Like, I never thought I was going to lose weight just as a byproduct of me doing this, but I have. And now, like, where do we go next? Because I'm just addicted to feel good. And if I can get them to that point where they say, I'm addicted to feeling good, I know we're making progress, you know, because now we can go anywhere. The sky's the limit in terms of how great they can feel.
It is an addiction. And it's setting yourself up with this strong foundation so that you feel like, even if you have a setback, you go on vacation, or it's the holiday season or something, and you're eating something that's not necessarily like in your normal diet now, you don't feel like the world's going to end again. You know, you don't feel that, you don't go back to overwhelm. And it's so true that it's also very mental too. People don't believe that they can do it until they feel it. Mm. They don't think that they can feel good until they actually feel good. Yeah. Right? They don't believe you. You probably tell them all the time, like, you know, you're going to feel good. And you probably have a million client testimonials of people who have come before them. But just because we're so stuck in this fear state and so overwhelmed that we don't believe it until we actually feel it. So it's great that you can get people to the point where they feel really good, and not just feel really good, but they're addicted to feeling good. So then
I think the other thing, Lindsay, is like, you know, there's so many programs out there where people have felt sold to so many times, and so many webinars and so many promises and so many things that are really expensive that they failed at, that they're just like numb to it, that they can almost make a change. Do you know what I mean? And I think that just stepping back and taking a look at what do you really want and how do you want to feel and what are your values, and then looking at somebody that you connect with who can be your coach that you feel really, really connected to. Because so often people come to me and they'll say, I'm so confused, like, I don't understand, you're posting about this, but then someone else says fasting is fine and someone else says this, like, I'm so confused. And it's like, what if you were to look at the audience that person is directing their content at? Because then you can start to decide, is it even meant for me? Do you know what I mean? So like, right, is fasting bad? Well, maybe for the athletic lean woman who has a lot of stress on her plate and has 3 or 4 kids like you and is also like running her business or something like that, then fasting might be an additional stress. But then is their audience looking at overweight women who are more sedentary, and this represents a really positive change? And so I think just stepping back and asking yourself the question, is this content even meant for me? Because most people, when they're putting out content, they're directing it at the person that they have in mind, right? Who is effectively the clients that they work with. But we often don't think of that. We just look at this massive information and go, I'm so confused.
And there are a lot of things out there that are good for the gander and not just good for the goose. You know, they're not bio-individual, right? Like the quantum stuff that we're wearing right now from Leela Quantum, that's pretty much good for everyone. You know, drinking clean water, getting a good amount of sleep, grounding, getting sunlight first, you know, to set your circadian rhythm for at the first light of the day. There's certain things that we can all do, but just like fasting, there's a lot of things that maybe we shouldn't all be doing because it can add additional stress to the body, and it can have the reverse impact of what your goal is. I recently read something about cold plunge, and I don't know how you feel about cold plunge, but I'd love to get your perspective, that women in their fertility time in life should not cold plunge. We should not subject our lower half to temperatures below, you know, 40 degrees for a sustained amount of time, that we really should protect our reproductive system. And I don't know if you've heard anything about that, but that was mind-blowing to me because I have a lot of friends in the biohacking world who are women of childbearing age who are avid cold plungers. So it's something that I'm really diving into, and something that we're diving into on the Biohacking Index as well. It's kind of like a catch-all of different resources for biohacking aficionados to share biohacking truths and wellness and longevity tips. But to your point in the beginning, like, how much is too much? Like, look at Brian Johnson. Is that just crazy what he's doing to himself every day? It's nuts.
I mean, it's quite funny, isn't it? Because the longest lived people, I think, are women. So it's like, okay, we can compete if you want, but we don't actually take 200 supplements in order to do it. Most women don't. We were getting there just fine on our own. But I don't know. I mean, it's just so funny because it's like, at what point do we just want to be immortal? Like, his whole events and everything is run around don't die. I find that difficult to connect with the spiritual side of me, because why would we not want to eventually die? Do you know what I mean? When your time here is done, I think, you know, I'm grateful for this experience, but what if I can make it the most healthy, vital experience that, you know, I can live until, you know, the age that I will die, but in really, really exceptional health and with vitality, and continue to make an impact? Because nature usually dispenses with things when they're no longer serving a purpose, right? That's what it seems like, nature's sort of natural thing. And so we all get to that point in our lives, right, where we have become so old that now it's our time. But to look at like really, really trying to extend it and live to 160, I don't know that many women look at it like that. I haven't come across any women that have these ambitions to live, you know, another 80, 70 or 80 years. Most women I know just want to really feel connected with their family, with their friends, their communities. They want to live, you know, in exceptional health, and they want to make a little bit of a dent in the world and the people around them in a positive way. It seems like a very male-driven thing.
And, you know, I think God, universe gives us those opportunities of connection, just like you had that connection point with your children when you were at the lowest of low and the sickest of sick in the hospital. You know, the same with me. I felt more connected in my third pregnancy than my first two, because in my first two, I was still working full time. I was traveling, I was speaking on stages, I was getting deals done. And with my third, I was knocked on my ass and I had to be on bed rest for 6 weeks. But God gave me that opportunity and that gift, even though it was painful, even though it was scary, even though it completely pretty much wiped out all of the income that I was making for several years and put me on a different path. But it was such a gift to have that connection. And you're right, things do need to die. Relationships need to die. Businesses need to die. There are things that just aren't meant for long term. It's my belief that we sign a contract when we come into this world, into this lifetime. And when that contract is expired, it's expired. And there's nothing you can really do about it. You could, you know, Brian Johnson could step off a curb and get hit by a bus and he wouldn't live much past 50. But it's how you live your life and it's how you create an impact on the world that outlives you. What you're doing now, all the people that you're working with, you're creating an energetic transformation in these women, which is then transforming the lives of their families, of their children, of their colleagues, other women. You're inspiring other people who then are going to inspire people, and that will live on way past you in this lifetime. What is, in your eyes, good to do, and what is kind of like, you know, I could take it or leave it?
So I think like the fundamentals of health, I think, are really important. So I think like if we look at the way that I do it, and anyone could use this just as a model, is I talk about how do we make the shift, right? How do we shift into vibrant health? And shift stands for sleep, hormones, insights, fuel, and training. And if we take each of those pillars, it gives us a framework. So like there's sleep and circadian alignment, and the research is coming out more and more that having that regularity around our sleep wake times is as or more important as the length of our sleep. That's like a really, really key pillar. And that's what I would call for many people is the domino, right? It's going to knock the others down, because when you're better slept, you're going to apply a better approach to everything. You're going to eat better. Your hormones work better. The next one, when we look at hormones, is how do we bring our hormones into balance through our behaviors? So I don't just mean sex hormones like estrogen, progesterone, but also like metabolic hormones, insulin, melatonin, which helps us with sleep, cortisol. We've got to get that rhythm between cortisol and melatonin right. So looking at that, and a lot of that comes down to these healthy behaviors. And then the insights are, what are we gathering? Like, what do we understand about ourselves? That can be journaling and connection, but it can also look like wearable data and lab data. What can we gather that's giving us information that we can work with and improve? And then the last two are fueling and training. So when we look at fuel, I break it into another acronym called FLOW, which is food, light, oxygen, water, because we don't just fuel our bodies through nutrition. We also need access to light. It's so important for the mitochondria. It's important for vitamin D synthesis. We need good hydration and we need to breathe right. And then lastly, how do we train our mind and body? And part of that is like social connection. Part of it is meditation and that connection with ourselves. And then there's the physical side for longevity. Like, what does it look like? If I want to live a long time, how do I bulletproof my body? How do I maintain really good muscle mass and, you know, aerobic fitness so that I can maintain health? And when you put those together, that's how I think you make the shift. And it just is a simple way for people to understand.
I love that. I love that. And I know you've interviewed many more people than I have on your podcast, but that was one of the best things that I've heard on anybody's podcast, not just mine. Shift. I love it. So sleep, hormones, insight, fuel, and training.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. I love it. I'm going to write that down on a big board and really hone in on that myself, because I feel like the sleep is easy, right? Because you can force yourself to turn off your TV, put your phone down, turn off the lights, listen to a meditation, go to sleep, right? Like, that's an easy thing to control. Hormones, do you need supplements to control those?
So, yeah, and it's a good question. I think, like, as we hit perimenopause, there's disruption. We know in the menstrual cycle, things change. But when we're looking at it, like, as a basis of, like, how can I get my hormones to work properly, that is partly due to that circadian alignment and sleep. Because we know that from the moment that we go and get access to that morning light, like, there's a, you know, suprachiasmatic nucleus behind the eye that now communicates. That's our master clock, and it communicates to all the other clock genes to do what they're meant to do at the right time. So if we can get that piece right, we can help to, and then we can use like the fuel part to communicate. So for example, are you starting your day with some protein? If you're starting your day with protein, now you're going to better control that blood glucose management and insulin than if you're starting with something high carb. The morning light is going to help with that melatonin release later and serotonin during the day to give you that mood lift and dopamine and things like that. If we've slept well, we're going to have better regulated hormones like ghrelin and leptin, because we know that if we're underslept, we see, I think it's like a 20% increase in ghrelin, which is a hunger hormone, and a 15% decrease in leptin. So now, like, you're like, I'm hungry, but I'm not full. And you're definitely not hungry, right, for protein and veg. You're like trying to create your craving other things. So
sugar and carbs.
Sugar and carbs, exactly, and maybe some fat. So I think that's the thing, is that if we use the others, right, as the action behaviors, they're going to start to bring our hormones into balance. Stress management, that's the training the mind piece, is going to be important as well, because cortisol is a very important piece of that. And if we're not managing our stress, our sex hormones are not going to look good either. So sometimes, yeah, we need supplements. Like, some people need methylated B vitamins, and that can help to balance out, you know, things like estrogen detoxification, for example. But I always like to start as much as I can with what can you do that you're doing anyway? You're going to eat anyway, so you might as well put healthy food into your mouth. And what can we do to modulate some of these neurotransmitters? Because I think as well, like, when I talk about people redlining it, if they're just go, go, go all day, they're in this like middle zone. We talk about moderate intensity cardio, stressing out our bodies, and we need to polarize our training between zone 2 and zone 5. What if we think about polarizing our mental focus as well? So we're in high gear where we're doing deep focused work, then we're coming out and recovering, and we're in low gear activities. Most people are depleting because they're like in middle gear multitasking all day long and responding to other people's needs, you know? So I think a lot of those things, and that can then drive you to, in the evening, crave carbs in front of the TV or go pour yourself a glass of wine, because really what your brain is saying is, I just need you to slow down, and carbs or alcohol is going to flick the switch. And so, yeah, I think these inputs, if we can manage them, we can just handle things a lot better.
So thinking about handling things a lot better without alcohol is an overwhelming thought for a lot of women, including myself. I know a lot of moms out there are like, there's no way I'm going to give up my 5 o'clock glass of wine. It's like the one thing I look forward to the whole day. And what I'll tell them is, you know, maybe switch it for like something really hydrating, put some creatine or something in a glass of water, like bubbly water, and try to curb that craving and give yourself a natural high and a natural boost. Like, maybe go, I interviewed Lavinia Errico on this podcast. It was released a couple episodes ago. And she's the founder of Equinox, the gym, the big, oh, yeah. I don't know if you guys have them.
Yeah, they have that in London.
Yeah, her whole thing, her whole purpose of launching Equinox was in New York City, was to get people away from happy hour. So she had a bunch of really fun, really sexy classes at 5, 6 o'clock after work. So instead of going to the bar and drinking, people were going to the gym.
Amazing.
But it's hard to get into that rhythm, into that flow. It's not impossible. And so a lot of people default to, well, I'm just going to take a pill, I'm going to take a supplement, and I'm going to continue doing the same things that I'm doing and expect a different result because I'm so reliant now on either this medication or this supplement to do the work for me. A lot of us don't want to do the work ourselves until we do start to feel like addicted to feeling good. So how do you get people out of that mode of like, well, I'm just going to take this, or I'm going to go sit in a cold plunge or do red light therapy, and I'm not going to actually do the work or put the good food or fuel into my body. I'm just going to rely on, you know, these things that I can buy off the shelf and it'll do it for me.
And hope that that's going to take care of my mitochondria, because I read that red light therapy does. But meantime, I'm eating all these inflammatory foods that are just destroying my mitochondria. Right. Yeah, I know. That was just like the human condition, isn't it? I think the thing that I found, right, and it's really interesting because there's a brand new book that's come out about this. And I interviewed the author a few weeks back. It's about to air, I think, in a couple of weeks' time. There's a book called Tiny Experiments. And this is what has worked for me. So I was just so keen to interview her because it's experiments that changed my life. So, for example, I was that person who used to have a glass of wine pretty much every night. It was like flicking that off switch. Would have a chat with my husband. There was a lot of connection. We would kind of dissolve our day, chat, catch up. And then I wouldn't go back to work, which I realized I was a bit of a workaholic, probably from my old lawyer days, that once I wasn't drinking, I would kind of go back to work. So I had to address that and find a new habit. But ultimately, I thought I'm going to give up alcohol as a little experiment. And I'd read that University of Oxford research said you can change a habit within 66 days. So I was like, well, I wonder how long it would take. I'm going to set 90 because maybe I'm just a slow progressor. So if I say 90, maybe the habit will change within 90 days, even though they said 66. And it was really interesting because actually the reminders for me stopped around day 55. So that was quite interesting and just bringing some curiosity. And then from there, I was like, oh, I've done 90 days. Maybe I go another 10 and it will be 100, right? That feels good. Like, I feel like that's a win if I can get to 100. And anyway, it's just gone past 1,000 days, but it started as a very small experiment. I did 30 days first. I failed. You know, I would always go back to it. And then I thought, I'll just try it. And I think that what she talks about in this book is, what if you just run a very short experiment? It could even be 5 days of, I'm just going to try this and I'm going to see how good I feel, if it's making a difference or if it's better in my life. Am I better with or without it? And then she has this sort of journal technique of just doing plus, minus, next. Like, it's so easy, you know, these are the pluses from my experiment. These are the negatives. What am I going to do next? And I think sometimes we put so much pressure on ourselves, because I certainly used to, and I said, I'm definitely not going to drink. You know, you wake up in the morning because you've beat yourself up because of last night's wine and you're like, I'm not going to, that's it, I'm not. And then you have a really busy day at work and you come home and the kids are kicking off and you're like, oh my God, I'm so stressed. I just need a glass of wine. And then you go through the cycle of beating yourself up again.
Right.
So I think just little experiments is definitely one way I've found myself and with clients is a good way to try, pressure-free.
That's a great idea. I can't wait to read that book and can't wait to listen to your podcast interview. What else have you learned from being a podcast host? From one podcast host to another, you know, what are like the big things that you've taken away from your guests?
From interviewing other people in relation to health specifically or just
anything.
In terms of podcasting?
Anything. I mean, anything you've learned throughout your career. You know, doing this.
I think the biggest thing I guess I've learned from interviewing so many people is that we need to, and as podcasters, this is our job, is to make it practical and make it easy. And James Clear talks about this, obviously, in Atomic Habits, right? But we just got to make it so simple, you can't not take the action. Because for anyone listening to this, if it's like, oh my God, I feel overwhelmed. Like, where can I start? Start with something that's easy, it's small, it's implementable, and maybe is a domino for you. So like when we were talking about shift there, you know, like we were talking about sleep, but maybe for some people they're like, do you know what? When I work out, I seem to eat better. I've noticed that every time and I sleep better at night, I'm less stressed. Or maybe that's the domino for you. And maybe you just say, get a friend and say, I'm going to meet them. And after work at 5, instead of happy hour, you're going to go to the gym, like the founder of Equinox was saying, or you wake up in the morning and you decide, I'm going to go for a walk. And a way of making this even easier on yourself is to have a pre-step And he talks about this. James Clear, I believe, talks about it. So I like to work out in the morning because it's proven really, really good for my mental health. And when I was coming off all my antidepressant and antipsychotic medication, I knew I'd been told I'd be on it for life. I had to have something that would be an anchor for me. And so morning exercise was the thing. But if you said to me, do you want to go and do a brutal like HIIT workout at 5:30? I'd be like, absolutely no way. Like the duvet is going to win every time. So I made it simple. I was just like, I'm going to exercise and move my body in the morning, but what that looks like will change on the day. And so the pre-step for me is if I go to the gym, unless it's a day where I'm going for a walk, if I get to the gym, the first thing I do is go on the treadmill and start it really slowly. And then over 10 minutes, I start walking a little bit faster and the blood flow starts moving. I find a podcast or some music, someone I'm going to listen to. And now I'm in a really different mental state than I was in bed. I can actually now have a serious conversation with myself about what today's workout might look like. And it's going to be ultimately a much better workout because I'm either going to be like, you know what? I'm really tired. This is just going to be a zone two. I'm just going to like listen to this podcast, do some walking on treadmill, maybe do some stretching, go home. And that feels great. And it just helps with my recovery. Or I've woken up a bit and I'm like, yeah, actually, I feel like working out now. You kind of can't go wrong. I think often we just put too much pressure on ourselves is one of the things I've learned.
That's a really great thing to learn. It's just for life and for coaching and for podcasting. It's something I learned in business very early on because I used to be one of those salespeople that overcomplicated everything. And like the client services folks would have come in and try to simplify all the things that I had sold. And my boss, I remember one of my first bosses telling me, KISS, keep it simple, stupid, or keep it simple, sister, whatever. You know, that's that became kind of like my mantra in my career. And the more simple I kept, you know, the value exchange of business, hey, you get this, you pay this, or you give me that, I'll give you this. Or here, I'm going to give you this, and this is the intended effect, benefit of it. If you tell people like, hey, just waking up at the same time every morning, I don't know what time you wake up. I wake up between 5 and 5:30 every morning. And I also exercise in the morning because it is good for my mental health. You know, some nights I don't sleep well. And some nights I sweat through my sheets and then I wake up really frustrated with my body. And so I need that time to really love on my body and refocus on the good parts of it. It's strong, it's healthy. You know, it's just going through a little bit of a change right now.
Yeah.
And so I do love that. Keeping it as simple as possible because then people give up or they think it doesn't work before they even really give it the chance to get addicted to it. You know, they give up before they get a chance to really see if there's an impact. And trying for a short amount of time. Hey, can I not drink wine for 5 days? And then expand upon that. You know, let that ball continue to roll down that hill. That's very cool. So how can people learn more from you? How can they listen to your podcast? How can they visit you on social media? What's your website? Tell us how we can stay in touch with Angela Foster.
Thank you, Lindsay. And thanks for having me on. I loved chatting to you and everything you're doing, all the goodness you're putting out in the world. So my podcast is High Performance Health. It's available on any platform. And then on Instagram, we do quite a bit of content on there, sharing the science and these little tips. So that's at Angela S. Foster. And then I would say, like, if you're thinking about making change and some tiny little steps that you can start doing. We started a newsletter back in January after I read Dr. Amy Milkman's research. So she's done some interesting work around New Year's resolutions. Everyone assumes New Year's resolutions are rubbish. You're never going to achieve them. But actually what the research shows is you're more likely to achieve your goals at that time of year than any other time. And why is that? Because it's something known as the fresh start effect. And so, but every Monday is a fresh start. In fact, every day, every morning is a fresh start. So we now have, that we've been running this year, is the Fresh Start email. And every single Monday, you get a fresh start from us, where I will send you personally a new little bit of science or tiny little tip, whether it's getting morning light, whether it's getting some protein, or maybe a breathing technique, all different little surprises. There's one every single week that you can start implementing. And it's super easy. And you just pick it and run it as a little tiny experiment. And so if your listeners want to sign up to that, it's completely free. They can just go to angelafoster.me/fresh start and they'll get onto the list. You'll get an email straight away with one fresh start, and then they'll resume on Mondays.
I love it. So angelafoster.me/fresh start.
Fresh start. Yeah.
I'm signing up right now as soon as they say goodbye. Well, thank you so much. Good luck to, you know, your son taking his driving test, to
thank you,
you with your business, your children. Your life is beautiful, and you're such an inspiration to women like me who are making that transition in our life, both in our own health and our own personal life, and also in our business. We really just want to impact this world in a small way or in a big way, but in a positive way, so that we can leave our mark on this world, so that mark can live forever.
Thank you, Lindsay. And likewise, I love everything you share. When I get your, I don't think, I'm not sure what day you send them, but is it on a Friday? I quite often will see a funny post with some memes from you.
Yeah.
I love it. The funny little carousels.
Yeah, on Small Hinges, Instagram, yes. At Small Hinges. Yeah, if anybody wants to check out my Friday funnies and send me some. If you have any funny things, people send me funny things all the time. Some of them are not appropriate. But those are actually the really funny ones.
That's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Those are the best ones.
Yeah, but thank you so much. And I'm going to sign up for the Fresh Start newsletter. And I'm going to keep listening to your podcast, and hopefully people will feel inspired by this podcast. And I'm really grateful to have you on. So thank you.
Thank you so much. And yeah, thanks for having me on. And I can't wait to share your podcast with my audience as well. So thank you.